Let's remember together some of the greatest TV and movie stars of yesteryear with the woman who knew them. Mary Jane Popp hosted radio and TV shows for nearly 5 decades, meeting these stars and getting them to share their real-life stories. You'll meet them up close and personal as Mary Jane searches her extensive archives for the best and brightest real star talk on Pop Star Talk. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp.
It's that time again for Pop Star Talk. Hi, Mary Jane Popp here, and have we got a double your pleasure, fun-packed show this week. Now, Kenneth Segura Knoll, my producer, joins me as always. And also with us is Matthias Bombal, film historian and tell-it-like-it-is film critic from MAB Hollywood, to take this journey back in radio time. Hi, Ken. Hi, Matthias. Welcome back.
Well, hello.
It's great to be here.
Okay. Well, we've got a lot of show to cover this episode, so let's get right to it with a gal who was every young man's heartthrob in her teens and still is, Molly Ringwald. But she wowed him on stage very early on. Just listen to this.
When you hear that music start to play, tap your feet and start to step that way. When you get the rhythm, you want to shout hooray. Be a hot time in the old town tonight. My bad. When you hear those bells go ding-a-ling, all turn round and gaily you must sing. When the first is through, in chorus all join in. Be a hot time in the old town tonight.
I'll tell you, boy, she really got him going to the hot time in the old town tonight as she performed with her dad, Bob Ringwald, on many a stage. Now, Matthias, you knew her dad, didn't you?
I did, Mary Jane. Bob Ringwald was one of the great traditional jazz style of jazz playing pianists. And remarkably, he was totally blind. And it was
really
a very interesting thing. He would send me emails. Now, if you think about that, that's kind of interesting. He must have had an interesting device in saying people, he always used to complain, people are afraid of sending me emails because they think I can't see. But he had some sort of device that would send back and forth. And we had a lot of communications about various shows that I emceed in Sacramento during the time the Sacramento Traditional Jazz Festival was here, at which he performed quite regularly. As a matter of fact, the recording that you just played was from an album called Molly Sings, which was released, a beautiful album that had a picture of this six-year-old kid on the front of it. It's a red album cover, an LP, for those of us that remember LPs. And she was just so precocious and charming because at each of the Sacramento Traditional Jazz Society events, Bob would bring out his young daughter, Molly, to sing these Betty Boop-like songs. And she did a lot of those wonderful things. Now, I was about her age, so I was intrigued because I was always interested in music of the 20s and 30s because it'd been what my grandmothers had shared with me of their life. So I spent a lot of time with them. So I was fascinated with that stuff. So for me, it was really fascinating to meet the six-year-old Molly Ringwald, because here's somebody who's singing the songs that my grandmothers would often talk about. So whereas the rest of the six-year-olds, seven-year-olds, eight-year-olds I knew were not listening to that music, let alone singing it publicly. So that was my first experience with Molly Ringwald and working with her dad, who lived in the greater Sacramento area. And I think in 2021, in August, when he passed away, there was a nice memorial service here in Sacramento, and Molly attended with her family, and I was at that event.
Now, Molly went on to do quite a few movies, and she was the teen heartthrob with the, like, what was it, 16 Candles, The Breakfast Club. But she was part of the Rat Pack, right?
Indeed, she was. You know, John Hughes made all those films in the early and mid-'80s. That seemed to be iconic for those that grew up in that era. Those were the films that spoke really directly to the teens. And Hughes had a great way of somehow encapsulating all of that teen angst and in a wonderful way that it spoke realistically to teens at the time, and have since become iconic movies that people want to revisit for people that are now 50 and 60 years old and remember those from their teen years. I mean, she had started in movies like The Tempest and Space Hunter, Adventures in the Forbidden Zone, but it wasn't until John Hughes and his movie 16 Candles in 1984, The Breakfast Club in 1985, and probably most famously for her Pretty in Pink in 1985, that she really became a star.
But you know, the thing is, even our engineer, Gray, before we went on the air, he mentioned that he had seen The Breakfast Club umpteen times. So I think, you know, we'll still go back to that. Now, she did some movies after that time. Were they as successful as the times like 16 Candles and The Breakfast Club?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, many people remember 1990's Betsy's Wedding, in which she was the star. That was a particularly good movie, I thought. She made Fresh Horses, which was a fine drama in 1988. Later pictures, including Cowboy Up in 2001, you know. And although we think of her in this iconic period of her teen years in those films, she's worked consistently in movies, just about one picture a year since that time. And she's got a movie in production currently called Thoughts and Prayers, and has been consistently working. And even in television, where she had two really good series, she was in Creepshow in one of the episodes, but she's also regularly as the moderator in the TV series The Bear.
Oh, my God. Now, Ken, the Jazz Festival, I mean, in Sacramento for so many years. I mean, jazz bands would come from all over the world. Did you know Molly and Bob, her dad?
I met Molly and Bob and a few other jazz players at Bill Ray's studios. And they were recording promos for the Jazz Festival. And we shot some promos for the Jazz Festival at Bill Ray's studios. And that's where I met them. And then, obviously, once I had met them a couple of times when they were on stage or coming off stage at the Jazz Festival, I went up and said hi to them. But she was a wonderful little girl.
Absolutely. And a real talent. And so she's grown up now. She was in Sacramento doing Sweet Charity. And she had taken over from Christina Applegate's the lead in Sweet Charity. But she is grown up singing-wise, too. And this is what Molly sounds like today. And we won't forget about her.
Yes, she wowed him in 16 Candles. She became an enduring teen in Pretty in Pink. And yes, VH1 named her in its 100 Great Teen Stars. But Molly Ringwald is a long way from the Breakfast Club and the Brat Pack and even her native Sacramento area. Now as Charity in Sweet Charity, the Broadway musical, she makes major strides in her life and her career and in her own persona. Nice to have you with us on Pop Off, Molly.
Thank you.
You know, it is so amazing because I read that you are actually trying to make Charity a real person. And the ladies that preceded you, it was more of a caricature over the top. Why do you want it to be real?
Well, I think that for me, whenever I can sort of relate to a character, it makes me feel everything a little bit stronger. And I think there's so much stylization around her that I thought it would be just interesting to just sort of make her a little bit more sort of down to earth and really try to get audiences to connect with her.
Now, be honest with me, is there a little bit of Molly and Charity and Molly?
I think that there's a little bit of my character in every character that I do, but I wouldn't be able to tell you where it is.
Now, you live in New York now, mm-hmm. And brand new life. I mean, you've got a wonderful boyfriend. Tell me a little bit about him. What does he do?
He's a writer.
Fantastic. Well, what a great combination.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's excellent. How long have you been together?
About 6 years.
Oh, that's beautiful. And your daughter, Matilda?
I have a 3-year-old daughter, yeah.
Oh, is she an aspiring Molly Ringwald actress?
Well, I should hope not. She's an aspiring Matilda, whatever she decides to do. But if she wants to act, I don't think that she'll be acting until she's older.
No, of course. And you know better what to do about that because you started pretty young, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I started doing community theater when I was quite small. And I've been performing with my dad, Bob Ringwald, since I was very, very young. But I think that Matilda will do better, you know, just to stay in school. And then if she wants to do it, she can do it when she's older.
Gosh, I remember when you came back one time for the jazz festival and sang with your dad.
Mm-hmm.
You were wonderful. Do you still enjoy jazz?
I do, yeah. I think it's probably my favorite type of music that I listen to.
Tell me who Charity is, in your opinion.
Well, Charity is just this sort of wide-eyed, you know, optimistic, full of love.
Naive?
A bit, yeah. I mean, in some ways, she's not naive at all. I mean, because she's a taxi dancer and she's sort of been around and she's a little bit street smart. But essentially, she is a real innocent.
Yeah, but I bet you just love doing her, don't you?
Oh,
I can see it in your eyes.
She's a lot of fun. Yeah, she's a lot of fun to play. And it's always interesting to play a character that's very different. Too.
Any more films on the horizon? Any other projects after this?
Well, I have a film coming out it's going to be on the Disney Channel that's actually called Molly and American Girl, where I play, it's based on the American Girl series, and I play Molly's mom, Helen McIntyre. So that's going to premiere on the Disney Channel on Thanksgiving, actually.
Fantastic.
And then probably after I finish the run of this, I'll do another movie.
Now, how does one like you, you've got a boyfriend, you've got a daughter, you've got a huge career. How do you balance all that?
I don't know. I just sort of, you know, it's just what I do. It's my job. I think having a child just forces you to organize your time a little bit more. You know, when you're an actor, it's a little bit of a gypsy life.
I can imagine. Now, what about hobbies? Do you have any hobbies that kind of takes you away from your work once in a while?
Well, I really like gardening.
Oh, that's great. I
mean, I write and I read and of course I love to travel and go to new places. But when I'm home, I have a rooftop garden and I really love doing that.
How cool. What's your favorite stuff to raise?
I love trees. I love Japanese maples.
Ooh.
Which grow really well here.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So they're not too hard to maintain?
No.
You're talking to somebody that doesn't have a green thumb at all. It's a brown thumb.
I'm sort of picking that up.
Yeah. Like, that's why I'm going, how wonderful you do that. My husband's the green thumb in the family. So.
Yeah. Well, living in New York City, it's really nice to actually be able to have a garden. You know, it's sort of a luxury in Manhattan. But it's kind of nice to sort of feel like you're connected to nature in some way.
That's beautiful. Now, I got to ask you, a lot of actors and actresses are very much into politics. It's either a cause or a proposition or a candidate. Are you politically involved at all?
I think I wouldn't consider myself very political. I mean, I have political opinions and I know to which side I lean, but no, I'm not that political.
Are you happy with what's happening in our country right now?
No, I'm not.
And it's sad, isn't it? That we have to be sad with our own country.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, I'm pretty anxious for this guy to get out of office.
You're not the only one.
There. Don't even get me started. I think that we can do much better.
I think a lot of people feel the same way. And that's sad to have to say that, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh. Okay. Step out of Molly. Come over to my side and look back at Molly and tell me who she is in a few sentences.
Oh, I couldn't possibly.
I know that's hard. I know that's hard. I know.
I don't think I'm ready for that kind of self-reflection. I think when I'm older and, you know, I do my autobiography, you know, sit down and sort of think back, but now I'm just kind of looking ahead.
Do you have a philosophy of life?
I don't think I have a set philosophy, no.
Something that kind of keeps you going and says, you know, this is part of me to keep me kind of stable and steady.
Well, I think my family is what does that for me. You know, my parents, very close with my parents and also with my, with my fiance and with Matilda, you know, so I think I pretty much just stay close to them and that sort of keeps me grounded.
If you could look forward and say the ultimate that you would like to do in career and or life, what would that be?
I think it would just be to do good work, work that I'm proud of, to be a good person and to be a good mother.
You also look great, by
Thank
the way.
You.
How do you keep fit? Do you have a regimen?
I do a Broadway show.
I'll do it to you.
Yeah, it's a huge aerobic workout. So, you know, other than that, it's just, you know, I have to do a lot of stretching and, you know, just sort of take care of myself because it's a very strenuous show to do.
How do you, I mean, that has got to be incredible. I mean, every day you're doing this. Sometimes there's a matinee, too. That's got to take it out of you. The energy has got to be zapped by the time you're in with, and done with the show.
Well, it's weird. By the end of the week, yes, you do get a little bit, you know, your voice gets a little bit raggedy and everybody's a little bit tired. But during the week, I think the show, you have to expend a lot of energy, but it also gives you a lot of energy, too. You know, if anything, it's sort of hard to... You would think that you would just finish the show and go home and crash and go to sleep, whereas most people really have to sort of wind down because you get so pumped up. It really is like an endorphin rush, just like, you know, running, I guess.
Is that audience, the live audience, that's special, isn't it? I mean, when you do movies, when you do television, it's sort of like after the fact, but that audience is like right out there.
Yeah, it is. And it's a little bit of our life force, you know, as actors. It's when you have a great audience and they're really there with you and they're responding. It's really enjoyable. It makes our job even more enjoyable.
But you seem like you just enjoyed life, period, which I think is great. I love to see that for a change because we see so many people who are depressed these days.
Uh-huh. No, I'm pretty happy person.
You seem to be a stable, normal, healthy person. That's so good to see. I applaud you, especially being on the road as much as you are. That's a lot.
Thank you.
How often do you see your daughter?
Every day.
Oh, is she with you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, how fun.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't do a tour like this without my daughter.
Oh, you know, that's great.
Then I would be depressed.
Did she get to see you on stage every night?
She saw me for the first time last Saturday. She went to a matinee. And she did really well. She's only three. She just turned three. And she was very good. She was quiet. She applauded.
Did she get Molly and Charity mixed up a little bit sometimes?
I don't really think she gets that. I she hears the word Charity. I don't think she gets that it's a character for her. It's just Mommy. Mommy's up there singing. People are sort of doing things around Mommy. But I think that's her understanding of it right now.
Well, you're just a delight, and we welcome you with open arms.
Thank you.
And hope you'll visit with us again.
I'm sure I will. Thank you.
It's Molly Ringwald, star of Sweet Charity.
And she was really such a delightful person. I mean, she just had so much to share. And I had no idea. Matthias, did you know that she actually translated two books from French to English?
I did not.
This was a smart lady. And Ken, same thing, right? You know, there was so much more, so many areas to her that were more than just a singer and an actress. And I love to kind of find out about those things. So that's important to me. Matthias, you have any final thoughts about Molly?
Well, what I think that is most charming about her, since she is, after all, a movie star and a television star, is that how down to earth she really is in person. Now, of course, I've seen her at the opposite ends of her development of fame in childhood and then at the sad occasion of her father's funeral service.
Yeah.
And those two points, in between those two points, were the points where she really developed the woman that she has become. And to find someone that has traveled through that arc, I still see the sparkle of the six-year-old girl that was this neat girl I thought was so neat because she was singing the music I liked, to the woman and mother, and clearly an excellent and wonderful performer. There's another TV show she's in I failed to mention, which was Riverdale. She was in 36 episodes of that as Mary Andrews between 2017 and 2023. Again, showing that she's really quite capable. So I guess my final thoughts are simply that here's a down-to-earth person that hasn't let the success of Hollywood and show business change her into a negative type of person, because that happens to some people. You see it a lot in Hollywood. It changes. You know, when you deal with such fame, it can change you. And she's got a good head about herself. And I think that's very healthy.
Now, Matthias, If people want to find out what you're up to, where do they go to?
MABHollywood.com on your web browser, or you can more easily find me on Facebook at Matias Bombals Hollywood. MATIASBOMBAL'S, Hollywood, like the city.
Thank you, Matias. And thanks so much for sharing your insights on Molly. Well, on that note, we're going to go to another loved actress from a TV series that resonated with audiences from 1974 to 1983. And this theme will immediately take you back to that Prairie family.
She grew up on the television series Little House on the Prairie. Now Melissa Gilbert is all grown up and on Little House on the Prairie, the musical on the big stage. From Half Pint, Laura Ingalls, to Ma. That seems a little bit kind of eerie, or does it feel like a natural progression?
It does seem eerie in a way, and I keep joking, you know, that I think I'm the first woman in musical theater history to actually play her own mother, having played the daughter. But it does make sense. It's a wonderful full circle moment for me, and having the opportunity to once again come back to these stories that have been such an important part of my life since I started reading the books before there was ever a television series. I learned to read reading Little House on the Prairie books. So it's an amazing thing. I actually like to tell people it's like going home, but someone has rearranged the furniture in a big way.
I love it. I understand that you swing a mean hammer when you do the Habitat for Humanity.
I am quite the drywaller. I am really good with drywall. I can measure, I can cut, I can hang it. I hang some mean drywall. That's pretty much been my specialty at our Habitat builds. I'm not so good actually with the hammer. I'm much better with the screwdriver and an X-Acto knife.
And you help build a home in every town that you go to?
Every city that we go to, we donate proceeds to the local Habitat for Humanity office there. And then we actually go in, the actors go in one day a week, and we work on a home site. So we actually work on someone's home, which is really great for us because, you know, we're actors. We work really, really hard, and it's a grueling job, but we're not traveling around the country fixing cleft palates and, you know, doing brain surgery. So to have the chance to kind of come down to earth and to be blessed and humble to build someone's home, which is like the main thing, the essential thing that people need above all else, shelter. It all stems from shelter, self-respect, community, family love. It all starts with being able to provide shelter. So for us to be able to do that is really grounding.
I mentioned the eerie earlier, going from Laura Ingalls to Ma. Mm-hmm. Isn't it kind of the same way? 1974, when Little House on the Prairie debuted, it was in recession.
I think
it was in recession. Now, 2010,
I know.
You're doing Little House on the Prairie, and we're there again.
I know. It's that part is eerie because none of it was planned. But I think, you know, these stories come back when they're really needed and when people need to be reminded that we started literally with nothing and we built a nation. And if we could do that, we can make it through this. We just have to remember to reach out and to ask for help and to give help. And I think at times when we have the least is when we need to give the most. And that is certainly indicative of our history. And I mean, Sacramento and California being the West are built and found, our state is founded on those principles, I think more than any other state in the Union. And so, you know, I think the timing is eerie and not in the least bit coincidental.
Do you ever think Little House on the Prairie will make a movie, a big screen movie?
Well, we've joked about that, and I've already said that if they make the Little House on the Prairie musical movie, they've got Nicole Kidman playing Ma, because there's no way they're casting me. And I throw my hands up now, because that's just the way that the nature of the business. They'll cast it, you know. It's like a running joke. They'll cast anything with big movie stars before they'll cast the people who actually created the role or whatever. Yeah. So it's fine. It's fine. She can do it.
I think you would be marvelous.
Well, thank you very much. I would be thrilled to do a feature film of any kind at this point, especially if something that, you know, I created on stage. But I am happy doing what I'm doing.
Now, you're an actor, obviously. You were president of the Screen Actors Guild for two terms.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about actors and what's happening with them. I mean, we've got Avatar. We've got all these animated films that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Are actors going to become irrelevant to movies?
It's a really interesting time in our industry as a whole. Not just for actors, but the way it's affecting actors is really fascinating to me. What's really interesting to me, and I'm watching it very closely, because when I was president of Screen Actors Guild, I sort of saw this sort of digital age coming and predicted that this was where things were headed. Not only because of the technology, but also in many ways it's cheaper to do films that way. Mm-hmm. Not to create an entire camera like James Cameron did and a whole new way of shooting, which he's now revolutionized the industry. But that I saw this coming. What's fascinating to me right now is that this past awards season, there was not one voice performer or CGI performer nominated in any category for any award. SAG Award, Oscar, Golden Globe, not one of them. Only the real actor, only the actors whose faces were actually on screen. Not even the CGI capture guys from Avatar.
Amazing.
Now, that's going to change because people are going to be captured on CGI more and more and more. Do I think actors will become obsolete? No. I think they're just going to have to find a new way of compensation. I think what they'll do is they'll have actors come in and they'll put the dots on their face and they'll do motion capture of their face. And we'll figure out a way in a collective bargaining agreement that if they use that in whatever film they use it in, they use the, I'll use my husband as an example, Bruce Boxleitner Happy, Bruce Boxleitner Younger, Bruce Boxleitner Whatever. We use the old motion cap thing that we shot in 2010 in the movie in 2020. He'll still get paid. But I think we have to, as actors and union members, have to look forward into, you know, those streams. Unfortunately, our guild is mired in such in crazy internal politics. They're still fighting over whether or not we can get a piece of DVD residuals. And DVD is a dying market, which I saw coming also. Not that I'm this great messiah or predictor, but everything I said was going to happen happened. So yeah. Nobody listened to me.
Let's talk about the personal side of Melissa. What makes you happy?
My kids make me happy. My kids are amazing. I have four of the most extraordinary sons. I've just gone through this, you know, little back surgery procedure, and my husband had to go away to work, and then he had to bring my youngest son, who's in the show, back on tour, and my three older boys took over. My eldest son took me for my surgery, brought me home. My next oldest brought dinner, and then my almost 21-year-old who just joined the Marines, who's in training before he goes into basic training, flew in from Texas and stayed with me while my husband was away to make sure that I wasn't alone.
Oh, you are blessed.
I am blessed with four extraordinary young men, one of whom's getting married to a girl that I love, and I have this family that's just growing and blossoming before my eyes, and, you know, I figure I got about two more years, and then I get a grandbaby. So that was the whole point of having the children, actually, is to get to grandma. So I'm waiting.
That's great. If you could step out, look back at Melissa Gilbert and tell me, describe her, tell who she is.
Oh, gosh. She's so stubborn. And she's hardworking and loyal and picky. And she eats a lot.
What's your favorite pig?
Meat. She eats a lot of meat. Melissa Gilbert is a carnivore who loves to sleep and spend time with her family. What else is Melissa like? Pretty jewelry.
I noticed.
Cozy socks. Handsome men, particularly the one that I'm married to, especially. And babies, my baby, anything, babies. My friends all brought their babies over this last week that I was home. And I couldn't have been happier. I was in my bed, surrounded by my animals and all of my children and my friends with their babies. It was the perfect. Had I not been recovering from surgery, it would have been even better, but it was perfect.
Do you have a philosophy of life that keeps you going?
I have a few. I'm trying to think of the shortest one. There's a poem in the that I used in the beginning of my book, written by a woman named Donna Markova, called "I Will Not Die an Unlived Life," which is a really important poem to me. I think right now, the one mantra I'm using more than anything is be kind to the kind, be kind to the unkind, because your nature is kindness. I'm trying. That's not an easy, it's a very sort of Taoist Buddhist teaching, but I think it's a really important lesson. And so I'm trying. I'm not always kind, but I try.
I bet you do a marvelous job.
But not so good at the unkind. Not so good at being kind to the unkind.
Really hard at that one.
Yeah, but that's the whole point of those teachings.
Now, you look wonderful.
Thanks.
Do you have a regimen of exercise?
Yes.
Vitamins?
I do. Well, I take a ridiculous amount of vitamins. I take, clearly because I have joint issues and arthritis, so I take a lot of glucosamine and chondroitin and omega-3s and primrose oil and all kinds of women's supplements. I drink about 3 liters of water a day. Mm-hmm. And my exercise is the show. When I started the show, I was actually a little on the curvier, rounder side for me. And during the course of the show, I've dropped 3 pant sizes, 3 dress sizes, and increased my cardiovascular. So for me, you know, it's really mostly about just being healthy. Mm-hmm. It's not about necessarily being thin. I don't like thin. I think there are too many thin women out there.
Anorexic.
They're too thin. Too thin, too thin, too thin. It's more important just to be healthy. And then I have one rule about food. If I eat something that's really ridiculously fried or too sugary or whatever, I have to have a salad.
That's a good idea. Nice balance.
I just got to balance. But I don't deny myself anything because I think that is where problems are started. I allow myself to eat what I want to. I just don't go crazy.
Yeah. And finally, what's your next project? Do you have anything in mind?
Oh, my goodness. My next project is to do the show again. I have a film in development, I think, possibly at Hallmark, a Lifetime, to do later this summer. And I'm waiting to hear about the future of this show. There's talk of us going to Broadway for a limited run, which would be great, and maybe doing another little tour of a few more cities that we missed, like maybe my hometown, L.A., but beyond that, I'm working hard here and writing a book, and then my one little personal goal now, I have 4 years to fulfill. By the time I'm 50, I'm going to learn how to fly. That's my next.
Oh wow!
I'm going to learn how to pilot a plane.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. By the way, isn't one of your sons named after Michael Landing?
My son Michael Boxleitner, who's in the show playing Willie, is named after Michael Landon. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. Welcome to Sacramento.
Thanks.
I'm going to have a wonderful stay while you're here.
So far, so good. So we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to the show, to doing the show for the Sacramento audiences, though.
And thank you so much for taking the time today.
Sure, thank you.
Well, I do love this gal. I mean, I didn't know, Matthias and Ken, that she was actually adopted. I had no idea. She was born in Los Angeles in 1964 to a newly engaged couple and placed for adoption immediately after birth. And then she was adopted the next day by actor and comedian Paul Gilbert and his wife, dancer-actress Barbara Crane. She's the daughter of the Honeymooners creator, Harry Crane. So interesting. Also, she's had some really hard times with her body. She had 3 surgeries on her neck for problems. And then also, one thing, and I did see her on this. I don't know if you guys ever watched Dancing with the Stars. Matthias might have watched it. But she was on season 14 of Dancing with the Stars. And they did a paso doble. And she tripped and on her partner's leg, suffered a mild concussion, was taken to a hospital, went home to recuperate, and returned to continue in the competition. And in week 8, she got eliminated, but she was number 5. I mean, to go home after you have a concussion from a fall like that and complete it, that's a trooper, don't you think, Matthias?
Well, absolutely. You know, it's interesting that at the time that you made this interview, she was, of course, married to Bruce Boxleitner. That marriage was between 1995 and 2011. But interestingly, she returned to Sacramento in a quite different way when she later married Timothy Busfield, who, with his brother Buck, operate the B Street Theater in Sacramento. Yep. And she has produced and appeared at the B Street Theater as well. And although this podcast goes around the whole world, some of us involved have a Sacramento connection because we've spent some time here. So we always like to look for those things that connect to our community. And so it was very interesting to learn, certainly, that she is a carnivore in Corsi socks. I never would have thought that before. So that's pretty interesting.
I'm going to have to ask her because usually type O blood types are carnivores. So, and that's what I am. I'm going to have to find out if she is too. One other thing, Ken, I don't know if you knew this. She was actually diagnosed with a rare neurological disorder. Now, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. It's misophonia. And it's kind of really weird. It includes that if she hears sounds of chewing, hand clapping, or gum popping, her anger would be triggered. And it's really, she suffers, I guess all her life she suffered from this. And she still has emotional, physiological, and behavioral responses to sound and at times visual triggers. So, you know, we never know, Ken, how some of these people suffer and still get out there and do their job.
You just explained half the problems with my teachers in elementary school.
Really?
Yeah, they got mad if they were clapping gum. What, all that whole list?
No, okay. Okay. I was thinking maybe you had this misophonia.
No.
Not really.
Now, see, the teacher would hear us chewing gum and...
Oh, I see. Okay, I get it now. Okay. Melissa's a very talented woman. She really is, don't you think?
I do. We mentioned briefly that, of course, her father was Paul Gilbert, who was an actor and an MC. There's a little bit of the family gene there. Paul Gilbert was in movies like Cat Ballou, So This Is Paris. He even appeared in the Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In and did a lot of MC work. He was the MC at the closing of the Fox Theater in San Francisco in 1963. She was surrounded by a little bit of the showbiz, which certainly led her in that path. So it's very interesting. She is very talented. But a little of the family gene in there probably gave her a little push at the outset.
It was fun watching her making the transition from Laura Ingalls on Little House on the Prairie to the mom on Little House on the Prairie on the Broadway show that came to Sacramento. But she did a great job. I mean, the transition, I guess, was normal because she aged it to about what she would have been the mom, which I thought was great. Ken, did you see the show?
Oh, no, I didn't. The original show? Yes.
Oh, no. I mean, the one that came to Sacramento where she played the mom. The original show, I think everybody has seen.
You talk about a transition. Mm-hmm. I saw her testifying in at the Capitol one time as the Screen Actors Guild president. And one of the politicians said, "Aren't you that nice little girl that used to be a politician?"
Oh, and what happened to that little girl?
And she was hard on him. You know, she went after the politicians on you know, the workers' rights for screen app for guild for actors. You know, for the deal. Yeah, she was, you know, a leader, a political leader, a great, great, good actress. You know, just interesting person. And it's, Matthias, it's really interesting. You know, I knew it that she would marry Tim, you know.
Yeah. I found that fascinating. You know, I've interviewed Tim. As a matter of fact, we'll probably have to have him on Pop Star Talk too.
You do know that B Street Studio was my studio before it was
No Tim's. Way.
Yeah.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
We moved from B Street. We got B Street Studio got sold a little before that. Another gentleman, Leon Corcus, he had his studio there, but I was there for, well, we were there. And then we moved over to Delta Studios.
Got it. Well, it, you know, the transitions, not many people know about some of the wonderful things that really occurred in Sacramento, California. They knew it as the state capital, but not really the theater and the arts and everything that are in Sacramento. Don't you think, Matias?
Yes, there's a great deal of richness here in the arts community from all forms, including the Sacramento Ballet, which is really wonderful. We have multiple theater companies throughout Sacramento for the legitimate theater. And some of those, of course, are equity homes like the B Street Theater that we spoke about earlier, where equity actors can work. But there's also amateur theater and a non-professional theater, too. And, of course, movies and film festivals and this great podcast, which stems from the Sacramento area to the whole world. A lot of culture here in Sacramento.
And Matias, don't forget that Charlie Chaplin shot a movie in Sacramento.
Oh, really?
I have not heard that.
Yeah.
He did stop here briefly on his way to Truckee to shoot The Gold Rush in 1925, which was shot in Truckee. And interestingly enough, just a little quick aside, he hired homeless people from Sacramento, gave them a box lunch, put them on a train to Truckee, and they were the extras going over the Chilkoot Pass in the opening shot of The Gold Rush. So that is the Sacramento connection. But I don't believe he actually photographed anything here in Sacramento proper.
I think there's a scene where the building, he's standing in the doorway and the building all falls down.
Oh, you're thinking of Buster Keaton in the 1927 film, Steamboat Bill Jr. And that film was photographed. That film was photographed in two locations in Sacramento. He built a small town, which was called River Junction in the movie, and that was just on the west side of the Sacramento River at the confluence with the American River, and that was in 1927. And you know it was shot there because in the back of the scene where he's running down the street, you can see the top of the 926 J building on the horizon. Still there, preserved forever. And the other shot that he did was the arrival of the train, which was shot in Freeport, just south of Sacramento, where there's two train tracks next to what used to be a place called A.J. Bump's Freeport Saloon. And that's where the opening arrival was photographed. But that was Buster Keaton.
Wow. I get the two good stuff.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it's amazing some of the things that happens in Sacramento and still happening in Sacramento, including Pop Star Talk. But, of course, Ken is actually in Albuquerque, and Matias and I are in Sacramento.
I was in Sacramento just 2 days ago.
I know. Yeah, he was up here visiting. And it's one of those things where I always love finding out about the person behind the star. You know, I love the stars. Yes, I always give them the publicity that they need to have if they're doing a movie or a book or whatever. But I wanted to find out more about them, you know. And she shared so much that she loves her kids. And when she was, you know, Laura Ingalls, she read the books before she ever became Laura Ingalls on Little House on the Prairie. And we're going to have on Arngrim. She was the nasty little girl on the Little House on the Prairie. She was always the one picking on Laura Ingalls. I've done interviews with her, too. So we got a lot of people to share with everyone on Pop Star Talk. And Ken, as always, my producer, terrific. Thank you so much for, you know, giving your insights on both Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin. And Matias, again, if they want to find out what you're up to, where do they go to?
Matias Bombal's Hollywood on Facebook. That's MATIASBOMBAL apostrophe S, Hollywood like the city. Matias Bombal's Hollywood on Facebook. Thank you, Mary Jane.
Thank you. You betcha. So that was Double Your Fun on Pop Star Talk this week. Thanks to Ken and Matias and our engineer Greg for a great time. I'll have another fan grave for you next time on Pop Star Talk. Till then, I'm Mary Jane Pop with this wish. Live simply, laugh often, love deeply,
and dare to dream.
Produced by Autovita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.